Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with life coach Cindy Chavez, and this is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today because it's another day where we get to talk about different ways to lift our vibe up and get into that good feeling space, which is really important these days with all the craziness that's been going on. And Cindy, you and I were talking about before the show and the various ways it can affect us. And, you know, when it starts affecting you, that's kind of like the reminder that says, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be working on my vibe. That's what it was. Yes. So, you know, we're going to work on the vibe a little bit more today. And we got a great way to get it going, by the way, because you'll remember last week we were talking about dream interpretation, right?
Yeah.
And we got an email from Deborah who kind of got that conversation going with her message from that week. And so I wanted to read it with you, because it's really, really cool. She says, thank you and Cindy so much for the fascinating discussion about dream interpretation. I am most definitely going to go through the process that Cindy talked about regarding that dream, and it's already triggered a few thoughts and interpretations. Mm-hmm. Loved the spiral comment and how we're never really starting all over again. That so resonated, especially, I think, because of what both the stream of David and Abraham say on the subject. I'm so glad you both found the dream very interesting, too, and it was interesting. It seems such a significant dream to have, possibly literally as the year turned, as I was asleep by 10 p.m. that night on New Year's Eve. My partner and I always ask each other on waking about our dreams, and it's usually, nope, can't remember. But that morning was, boy, do I have a humdinger of a dream to discuss. The whole discussion was really interesting and so helpful. I'm going to buy the dream interpretation book that Cindy mentioned, as that process sounds brilliant. It's really given me enthusiasm for exploring the rich realm of dream interpretation. It's always freaked me out a bit, the possibility that our dream life is our, quote, real, unquote, life. But it's more and more evident to me that our lives are very akin to a lucid dream anyway, one that we are so very capable of molding ourselves for our continued expansion and joy. So thank you with love and appreciation. Kind of made me think of The Matrix when she said that, you know?
Right. There's a saying that one of my teachers has said before, and it's an affirmation that says, I am the dreamer and I am the whole dream.
Yeah. That's good.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's wonderful, the conversation already triggered some ideas, you know, for her. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. So I figure that's a good way to get the show started because, I mean, that's a nice one. That's a really good email. I like that.
Yeah, husband and I do that when we wake up. We talk about
it. Do you really?
And he has great dream recall, and I haven't had the best dream recall for the last few years. Probably because I haven't had the best sleep. You know, dreaming is actually important to our well-being and our health. And so if you never remember a dream, then there's something going on there. It's worth looking into. But one of the tricks that I learned for dream recall, if you're someone who says, oh, I never remember my dreams, is to start keeping a dream journal. And when you wake up, because it's really easy when you wake, you say, okay, I'm going to keep a dream journal. Every morning I'm going to write down my dream. And then, you know, you wake up in the morning and you don't remember a dream. It's really easy to say, oh, and just don't even pick up the notebook, right? Because it's like, well, I don't remember it. I don't have to do it. It's like, right? And you skip it. But the trick is to actually open the notebook anyway and to write the date and to write, I don't recall my dream right now, but maybe I will later. And to just jot a few lines of something like I didn't sleep well or I slept well or whatever you want to put, you know, it's cold in the house or whatever. Because I think something about that habit triggers something in your subconscious, right? It's like, well, she's going to write in this notebook whether I remember or not. I might as well start remembering. I think it's a directive that we send to our subconscious to start. Okay. This is important. I need to start remembering.
That's an interesting idea, especially in the context of what we previously talked about and what I've been talking about on the podcast that with the ARAS, the filtering system that's built into the back of our brains. That kind of makes me think you're programming that to say, okay, let the dreams through. I mean, they're not really sensory, but why not? I mean, that could be part of the same thing.
I think so. I mean, it makes sense, right? And the idea about dream life being like the real life. Yeah, that is, I think I've told this story before, but years ago, I decided I was going to have a lucid dream. I really wanted to know what that was like. And I set that intention like every night, like I read books about lucid dreaming, you know, really trying to get it into my mind and my subconscious. So I'd start paying attention. So I would do this. I did all the tricks that you're supposed to do. Like one of them is looking at a clock all the time during the day. Every time you're around a clock, which I have a clock in my kitchen, I have a clock, you know, several clocks in the house. So anytime I have to look and then look again. Because if I look at the clock, you know, right now it's 3:07. Now I look back at it. Well, it still says 3:07. It might say 3:08, but those are my only choices. It's going to happen. But in a dream, you look at the clock. It says 3:07. You look away. You look again. Oh, it says what? 8:30. How did that happen? So it's called a reality test. So if you're doing that all the time, you'll start doing it in your dream. And then, of course, in the dream, when you look at your watch and it's 1 o'clock and then you look again and it's 4, you're like, wait, oh, I'm in a dream. And as soon as you say that in the dream where you recognize I'm in a dream, if you can stay asleep and stay in the dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Then you have like control over what happens. And even sometimes people that have nightmares that are really scary have used this to stop that process because all of a sudden wow. They realize, oh, this is just a dream. Like I'm not afraid of these things, that it's just a dream. And so it's really useful. And so I started doing that and was doing it all the time. And I had a lucid dream. I had a lucid dream that I talked about the other day where,
right.
Where my brand new countertops in real life were black granite. And in my dream, I was talking to my son and I looked over and they were white. And I said, hey, wait a minute. Our counters aren't white. And I was like, we're in a dream. And I jumped up and touched the ceiling and I'm only 5 feet tall. So that was kind of a big deal. But I started having more and more lucid dreams. And then I got to that place where the lucid dreams felt so much more real.
Wow.
Than like waking life. Everything was more intense. Colors, smells, sounds were sharper, clearer. And it kind of scared me, to be honest. You know, it was about 20 years ago. And I remember that I was in a grocery store and I had gone to get gas before I went to the grocery store. And when I got to the grocery store, I had a cart full of groceries and I was coming up to the line and I went in my purse to get my debit card out and it wasn't there. And I thought, oh no. And sometimes if I ran my debit card through the gas pump, I would just stick it in my pocket while I pumped the gas. And I had these pants on that had these really shallow little pockets. And I said to myself, oh, it fell out of my pocket at the gas station. Like I lost it. I lost my card. And then all of a sudden I had this idea that I really could just, as if it were a lucid dream, I could just decide that my credit card was over like in the frozen food aisle or something and walk over there and pick it up. And it freaked me out because I kind of knew it. Like I know my name. Like I know, even to this day, I'm like, I know I could have done it. But I decided that if I really did that and went over there and picked it up, that I would just completely lose my and not be able to deal with life anymore. I was like, I don't know how I'll handle it. So no, I'm just going to, assume I lost it at the gas station. I'm going to call the credit card company and have them cancel it. And I'm going to use my other card. I'm going to stand right here in line and I'm going to stay right here because I'm not ready for that now. I'm ready for it now, actually.
That is funny. That's really funny. Well, you know, you touch on something that people often bring up, and that is fear of getting what you want. You know?
I think like Deborah talked about that spiral that we talked about last week. I think that I'm in a place now that if that happened this week, I'd go look for it.
You would? Okay.
Yeah, because I'm not afraid of like, how am I going to deal with this if this actually happens? But then I was like, I won't be able to deal with the whole paradigm of what's going on if I really can do that. If I can just pull my credit card out of thin air when I absolutely know I lost it somewhere else. It's kind of fun to think about.
Very cool. I like that. Yeah. Every time you've talked about lucid dreaming, you give me like one tiny baby step closer to being interested in trying it. But up until this point, I really haven't had the interest. But at least you've now planted in my brain in my mind, or actually I planted it there because I accepted it, the idea that I can use the clock thing as a way to get there. I said, okay, well, if I ever do decide that I want to do it, at least I know how to get there and how to get up.
Have you ever seen the movie? Have you ever seen the movie Inception?
I don't think I have, no.
Oh, okay. Well, then you just have to go watch it. No spoilers.
Okay.
Oh, it's but there's a reality. Part. There's a reality test in that movie because the movie is about dreams. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
Well, this isn't about dreams, but it does follow up on the whole concept that we were talking about of the work that we do on ourselves and whether or not we venture out to do things like lucid dreaming and so forth, because this actually comes from somebody who has contacted the show previously. And she's somebody who I interact with on one of the Law of Attraction groups on Facebook. She sent me a personal message because she was really stuck on something and wanted to get my take on it. So I answered her, but I figured what she had to talk about here, the question she was raising was a really good one for you and me to talk about. So her name is Tasfia. Once again, that was, she actually typed it this time, but the first time her name was in Arabic letters. I think they're Arabic. So I had to run through Google Translate to find out how to say the name, but it's Tasfia. And she says, I have started meditation and prayer as a self-love activity and I am sticking with it. Good for you. But there's a problem. Every time I start this kind of thing, all the painful memories start to arise. I try to process them and I do try to look at it from their perspective, but the pain doesn't seem to go away. So what can I do about it? She asks. What do you think? That's a fairly common thing, I think.
It's a really good question and it is fairly common. And the reason why is because, or at least what the way I would think this is explained best is by looking at the idea that of alignment, right? Like, you know, when you walk into a room and you're really happy and something is going on there where people are really happy and it's just like it builds up. Why? Because we're all happy and we're all celebrating. You think about maybe not this past year, but years past for holidays. Like when you get together with people you haven't seen in a long time and everybody's excited to be together. And when you all come together, you're all happy. Everybody's hugging each other. And they're like, well, that vibe is in alignment, right? Everybody's right. In alignment, so it's magnified. And in the same way, think about, you know, when you have to go to a meeting with some people who are not in alignment with you and you're not really excited about having to go, right? Or maybe as a kid, you get called down to the principal's office, or maybe as an adult, you know, your boss wants to have a talk and it's not sounding like it's going to be comfortable. Whatever's going on there, if you were one moment really happy about something and the next moment you get that call, it's almost like both emotions are magnified because of the contrast, right? We might say, oh, I was having the best day and then, you know, XYZ happened. And it just feels like a real bummer because of the contrast. So I think that when we start to decide, when we make that decision, that commitment, like I love to hear somebody say, I've been working with, you know, prayer and meditation to create self-love. That's really awesome. And so all of those things within us and within our memory, within our past experience, remember that there's a saying that says issues stay in the tissues.
Ooh. Right?
And what that means is that just because we have a memory of something, but our body remembers it, our tissues, our muscle tissue, you know, our body actually has a memory of things that happened. And so when we start loving ourselves consciously and committed to it and making that conscious intention to love ourselves, these things that we find unlovable about ourselves, painful memories, they are very magnified in that contrast. They're not aligned. Right? When we talk about painful memories and we talk about, you know, relationship stuff, maybe say painful memories from when you were a child or whatever, a lot of times what's also attached to that is stories. So like we've talked about this before, but when my sister was 11, I was 22 and I got married and moved away. And everybody was happy for me, you know, there wasn't anything you know, wrong. But for years, I was very close to my sister as well. And for years, she told me later after she was an adult, we were both adults. She said, I always thought that you left because of me.
Aww.
Like that I said something that hurt your feelings or something. And then that's why you decided to move away. She said, because nobody really explained to me. And, you know, in my mind, there wasn't anything to explain, right? It's right. Like, well, yeah. I got married and we're moving. And I've heard psychologists say before that, especially as children, if we don't know why something's happening, we put the blame on ourselves. We think that we've done something, or we think that we are the problem, or we are to blame. So do you see how that story is attached to that? Like, I got married and moved away. I loved my family and my sister. It had nothing. I was moving because the job opportunity for my then husband was somewhere else. It had nothing to do with anyone in my family.
Right.
So she has this painful memory of me leaving, but it's not just a painful memory of me going away. There was a story for years attached to it that said, something's wrong with me, and that's why my sister moved away. Mm-hmm. I did something wrong, right? There was like, remember, guilt is when we think we did something bad. Shame is when we think we are something bad, right? So there was like guilt and shame attached to this story for her, which magnified the pain of the situation greatly. Because at some point in time when she was no longer 11 and now she was, you know, 17 or 18 and we were talking and she told me this and I just said, what? Are you kidding? Oh my goodness. Like I felt
shock. Yeah.
Oh, I felt horrible that for years she had that story, that thought, you know, I said, oh my goodness. Of course it was nothing you could have said or done that would make me like move away, you know? And of course that was enough to heal that. That wasn't a big deal after that, but I think that what you do is you keep going, right? I mean, to answer the question, what do? You keep going. You recognize that a lot of those painful memories have stories attached to them that are probably not the whole truth.
Right.
And, you know, there's a place where you can comfort that past self, that young self, that younger self that's remembering those things and say, it's okay. It's like, you're okay. It's okay. That felt terrible at the time and it's okay. And I love you. I still love you and I love you more every day. And you are worth being loved. And, you know, just continue on with the practices that you're doing to create more self-love. When the pain comes up, it's even more important to continue on with those practices.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why that pain might come up, because it's that part of us that's suddenly willing to share that pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about at some point, my sister was willing to have the conversation and say, you know, when you moved away, I always thought it was my fault. And I think at that point she had realized by herself that it couldn't have been her fault. Right. She was like, I know you didn't move away because of me, but for years when I was younger, that's what I thought.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, she had become an adult at that point. So she'd had 10 years or more to figure it out. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I think just like in, I don't want to say real life, it's all real life, but just like in our conversation, mm-hmm. she was ready to say, this was so painful for me because this is what I thought. I think that our inner selves sometimes, when we start really loving ourselves, I mean, think about that. Doesn't that make sense? I know when I feel completely loved and accepted, that's when I'm willing to be a little more vulnerable. That's when I'm willing to say, this really hurts. That's when I'm willing to own up to things, you know, that I might not be willing to own up to about how I feel and how things have caused me pain. So I think it's your inner self actually is suddenly realizing how much you love yourself and is willing to say, this was really painful. And all you have to do is like, just look at that without judgment and just have understanding and grace towards that part of you that experienced that. That's
really good.
That's how I would deal with it. You know, just off the top of my head, being asked this question, because it's really interesting. I never really thought about it before, that once you make that commitment to self-love, what do you do if all these painful things keep coming up? Well, I think the best thing first is to figure out, why would that happen? Why would these painful things come up? And maybe that's why. It's part of you that feels pain and just wants to be loved. And here you are offering love. And so it's showing up saying, please love me. Here I am. Yeah.
That's really good. I like that.
Yeah. What comes up for you?
When I first read the message from her, the first thing that came to me was, well, she's doing meditation and prayer as self-love activities. And I thought about that and I said, okay, well, meditation is where you're basically just trying to clear your mind. You're trying to get into a calm state. And thoughts keep popping up. So you say, oh, but it popped up again. I'm going to calm it down again. You just keep going through that process. And over time, your mind starts to calm down and you can actually get to the point where it just gets quiet, which is nice. It's like the best thing in the world, you know, because all of a sudden all those old tapes aren't playing anymore.
Peace.
So the meditation part, okay, that sounded pretty good. Then the prayer part, and I thought about the way people usually pray. And I said to myself, you know, that could be like a two-edged sword, depending on what you do there, because very often people pray from a negative vibration. Something didn't go right. Something didn't feel right. Something was not what they wanted. They're feeling afraid. They're feeling lost. They're feeling depressed. They're feeling anxiety. They're feeling a bunch of stuff. And the prayer ends up being some variation on, please help me not to feel this thing I don't like feeling. And when you get into that kind of a prayer mode, all you're really doing is reinforcing the thing you don't like. And it's something that I think it's ubiquitous. It happens across religion. It happens across the world of law of attraction. It happens across all societies. People just tend to do that kind of thing. And so when she mentioned the painful memories, I'm saying to myself, I wonder how she's praying. I wonder what it is, what kind of prayers that she's saying. Because she said these are for self-love building.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't say anything about how she was telling herself that she loved herself. She was saying that she was praying. So I thought, what's the prayer? What exactly
that's interesting. So many prayers come from that kind of victim status place,
yeah.
Right? And I mean, we've all experienced that victim energy before.
Sure.
There's no judgment from me about it. It's part of human life, but we don't want to stay there. We want to be able to recognize when it pops up. And, you know, you're making such a good point that it brought to mind. There's a teacher that's very popular that many people love. Her name is Tosha Silver. I love her. Her very first book was called Outrageous Openness. And when I first read that book, I felt a little bit jealous because I felt like I could have written that book because so many experiences there. I was like, oh, and then she talked about Florence Scovel Shinn, how much she loved Florence Scovel Shinn. I was like, well, no wonder I love you, person, because I am a big fan of Florence Scovel Shinn. Well, Tosha Silver wrote another book called, I think it's called Change Me Prayers.
Mm.
And the thing I love about that idea is that her prayers are not so much saying, you know, please make this thing go away because I hate it, but change me into someone who knows how to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Change me into the person that deals with this with ease. Change me into the person who loves myself, even though I'm having painful memories, right? It's kind of along that line. And so I think you're right about that. You really hit on something there that it's important to kind of go in and figure out how we are praying. What is, right? What is the intention behind it? Not only the intention behind it, but
yeah,
how are those words? I don't know. I've been talking about this a lot lately, but I think words are very, very important and powerful. Actual words, right? That's why they call it spelling. It's like making a spell. It's important how we phrase things and how we say things, how we talk to ourselves, how we affirm things. And yes, how we pray. If we are people who pray, how do we pray? I think that the words are important. I think the intention of the heart, yes, is maybe more important. Sometimes our words come out jumbled or don't come out right. And the intention is kind of like what they'd say about gift giving, right? It's the thought that counts. And yet I think the words are important. I think it's important for us to take a look at the words and see what they are, to have integrity and keep our word, so that our word will be powerful. So I like that idea of examining how we're praying.
And I'm reminded also of the fact that you and I spent a lot of time here on the show investigating the books of Neville Goddard, including a book about prayer. I think the actual name of it was The Art of Prayer or something like that.
Right, yep.
And what was he talking about there? He was talking about the feeling behind the prayer.
Right.
Well, if the feeling that she's experiencing from saying the prayer is a painful feeling, then I have to ask myself, what was the feeling that went with the original prayer? I mean,
yeah.
We don't tend to get delivered the wrong messages, you know? We don't tend to say, okay, here's my great feeling and get back. Well, here's a reason why you should feel terrible. It's not the way it normally works.
Yeah. No, it's really thought-provoking to consider what's not just what's behind it, but what's actually going on. And I think the reason why it makes a difference is because when we start examining whatever it is we're saying, we become very aware and conscious and intentional and deliberate about how we change that, what words would be better, right? It's like when we write a poem or we write any piece of copy or write a book and we go in and edit it, we start to get very intentional about what words we use, and we really want to convey a certain message and a certain feeling. So I think that that's really important to think about here, is that just the act of getting more aware and more deliberate about how we say things could actually change the outcome of how it's affecting us.
I didn't think to say this when I first responded to her, but I'll say it here because I think she's probably going to listen to this podcast. I'll tell her about it afterward that we actually discussed your question. but if I were her, I think one of the things I would try to do when I sat down to do my practices is basically start off by saying, please help me to feel love for myself. Be that direct about it.
Yeah.
And even play in while you're doing the meditation portion, just play with, what does it feel like for me to feel love? Or even before you sit down to do it, ask the question, what does it feel like to feel loved? So that you can kind of start tapping into what that feeling is. Now, when you actually start doing the prayer, now you have a feeling context to work from.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that kind of setup, that preparation, you're kind of going with whatever your prior feeling was before you even started the activity by default, whatever it might have been. And you're kind of at, you know, the whim of whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the mindful part, I think, really becomes important. It isn't just being mindful about what's going on. It's being mindful about what you're feeling. What are you bringing to the table as you're doing this activity of building self-love? Because it's kind of hard to build self-love from a perspective of lack of self-love. So you kind of have to get it all, you know, in alignment.
Yeah, no, so true. Just the intention of, and, you know, commitment level, right? Of loving yourself and not being deterred when these other things come up, but knowing that it's just part of the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a big thing, because I think you're the one who describes how it's never a smooth curve, right? If you draw it on a graph, how we want it to go, that's always, we draw that as a smooth curve, but how does it actually go? It's like, it's all over the place.
That's right. That story, that was like 30 years ago or maybe 35 years ago. And it affected my whole life because I realized that, you know, for those of you that haven't heard that story before, I was in the midst of a healing crisis. I was really, really sick for about 2.5 years. And I had started to have some good days and I thought, I'm well. And then I had a terrible day. And on that day, I had a doctor appointment and I think I was very much feeling depressed about it. And the doctor said, what's going on? And I said, well, yesterday I had a fantastic day. And so I had a great day the day before and, you know, 3 days in a row of really feeling so much better. And I thought I was well. And then today I woke up and it was like, terrible. And he took a piece of paper and he drew a dot in the bottom left-hand corner and a dot in the top right-hand corner. So just a square piece of paper with a diagonal line. And he said, this is when you're feeling really sick and this is where everyone wants to be. Zoom up there. And he said, it never looks like that. It looks like this. And he made this zigzaggy line, like, you know, the stock market line. But it was like, the thing is that it was getting better. But there were dips and valleys, and it's never a smooth curve. It never is. Whatever we're going for, whether it's, you know, better health, more money, feeling happier, you know, there's always that jagged motion. That's just life on earth, right? We do get better and better, and we have to remind ourselves that it's not always a smooth curve so that we keep going. Right?
And why is it not a smooth curve? I mean, it's a very good reason why it's not a smooth curve. We live in a life of contrast. You know,
yeah.
So contrasting things happen regardless of whether we intended them to happen. Stuff's happening all the time out there. We're not the only ones in this. Yes. In one sense, we are the only person in our world in our own little bubble. In another sense, though, we are in a world with 8 billion people who are all in their own little bubbles doing their things, and we're all touching each other's bubbles all over the place.
That's right.
And that creates contrast. I mean, you can be in your bubble all you want. The contrast is still going to be out there. But
yeah.
What we're aiming for is to get to the point where the contrast just doesn't bother us anymore. But until we get there, it affects us. It just gets under our skin. So of course we're going to have that jagged line. You know, no matter how clean we are in our own practice, the jaggedy is going to happen. It's just going to be there.
I think about that. I think about that other graphic as well, where we get excited about a certain outcome. And we make the intention that we're going to do that thing, whatever it is, right? We're either going to make more money, or we're going to lose some weight, or whatever it is. And we start doing the thing that we think we need to do. So maybe we want to lose weight. So we start working out. We start eating better, whatever it is. And we do it and we do it and we do it, and we don't see results. So we stop.
Yes.
And that part of the graph, that beginning part of the graph where we're doing these actions and we're hardly seeing any results, it's called the Valley of Disappointment. I'm pretty sure if you Google Valley of Disappointment graph, you'll see it. And most people quit right before that line gets ready to zoom up and give them results. They stop during that because they're disappointed, because they're like, this isn't working, right? I'm doing this thing and it's not working. And so it's like one more reminder to keep going. There is a place where you recognize that whatever it is you're doing isn't working, right? I mean, trying to fix a relationship and it's just not fixing, or you're trying to, you know, make more money and the things that you're doing to make more money just don't seem to be working. You know, there is a time where you say, okay, I need to, that insanity rule, right, is I can't keep doing what I'm doing and expect some kind of different result. But there's also the other place where you need to stay the course for a while and give it a chance and see what happens and focus on the outcome that you want to see. You know, so two different things. I will tell you this weekend, Walt. This weekend, today I had an aha moment connected to something that happened this weekend. I made a wonderful brunch on Saturday and then almost finished cleaning everything up and the sink wouldn't drain.
Oh.
So I did what I usually do. I have a couple little tricks. You know, I live in a house that's almost 100 years old, so the plumbing, you know, isn't brand new.
Stuff happens.
But it wasn't working. So I called for reinforcements, which is my husband.
Sure.
Now, friends and family often refer to my husband as MacGyver because he is a wizard at like fixing things with whatever is on hand. Like he jump-started a car with a computer one time.
Really?
Oh, not kidding.
Very cool.
So he came in fairly confident that he could get it fixed, and he used the old vinegar and baking soda trick, and he used boiling water with Dawn, who he swears has some kind of miraculous properties, and he used the plunger, and he used the snake, and it was not going to happen. So after using lots of boiling water, you know, that night, now it's nighttime, we went to bed with a kitchen sink full of water, and we woke up with a kitchen sink full of water. It had not drained a drop.
That's one serious clog. Yeah.
Right. So I wasn't really keen on calling a plumber during COVID, you know, having someone else come in, but it's like, it just wasn't going to happen. So we did. And the plumber was here for almost 3 hours. And in the I was in my office. I like barricaded myself in my, I was like, bye, I'm going to my office. I never even saw the guy, right? I could hear, and I was in here and I was working on some things and I was thinking, why is it taking so long? See, just like we're talking about, right? I was like, I've had a plumber come out before. It's been an hour. It's been 2 hours. It's been 2.5 hours. What in the world? At one point he had come in and said that, you know, our snake is like a baby snake, right? He has like a professional plumber snake because he's a professional. He had snaked out 35 feet and hadn't hit the obstruction yet.
Ooh.
So a little past 40 feet and suddenly we had a drain that worked.
Wow.
So here's my aha moment today. When we could have plunged and snaked and boiling water and detergented and vinegared and baking soda ourselves forever over here. We never would have touched it. It was too far out of our reach. We could not see it from our vantage point. And it hit me today. I was like, oh, this is sometimes people hire me because they've been working on something forever.
Yes.
And it just hasn't changed. And somebody wrote me a testimony the other day that said about me, I gave her the information and she connected all the dots.
Yes.
And it was a 20-year thing that was fixed just like that. Why?
Yeah.
Because I had the vantage point. I had the tools. I could see it so clear. And she was like, oh. Right? Mm-hmm. So it hit me that this is why sometimes we hire a professional.
Yeah.
And I swear, we never would have got that clog fixed.
Yeah, 40 feet out. That's a long, long distance. that's almost out to the curb, depending on how far your house is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long way.
So I'm not just here like pitching myself, but, you know, there are lots of professionals out there. If you've been working on something, and you've been trying to manifest something, trying to heal something in your life, trying to fix something, trying to get a different outcome, and you've been trying and trying and trying and trying and nothing seems to be working, that's sometimes the sign or a good opportunity to ask for help. Whether it's hiring a coach or, you know, reaching out to Walt on the podcast or whoever you're reaching out to, but sometimes it takes that outside vantage point. Sometimes it takes a different perspective. Sometimes it takes somebody who's a professional at whatever it is that you need. So don't ever be afraid of like getting professional help, whether it's therapy or a coach or a doctor or, you know, whatever it is, because we're all here together. We weren't meant to always go it alone.
It's true. Yeah.
In we fact, talked about also, this before. Hyper-independence is a trauma response.
That's true.
Oh, I'll do it. I got it. I'll do it myself. I'll go get a library book. Nope. I can't. Oh my gosh. I was the poster child for this. Really? I mean, so many things. I said, oh no, I can take care of it. And I still have a habit to do that, but I finally realized that like, no, sometimes it's just worth reaching out.
I laugh because I was exactly the same way for about a 10 to 15 year period. And it's not a happy place to be in, but that's why I was laughing because I know it so well.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm also reminded too, you make a great point about the value of reaching out to a professional for help when you need help. But it also reminded me of something. One of the things that the people in the positive psychology movement talk about is the value of social connectedness. They say it's the number one predictor of life success, no matter what kind of success you're talking about. And it's actually twice as likely to predict life success as smoking cigarettes is likely to lead to cancer. I mean, that's how potent, that's how powerful the likelihood is. So with that in mind, I had another conversation with somebody online. Again, kind of a similar thing in that they were stuck. They were really, really deeply stuck. And in this case, it was a woman who was stuck. And not only was she stuck, but she had a toddler and she also had an infant. And she was finding herself constantly getting sucked down into that negative vortex despite everything that she was trying to do. And I began to realize she doesn't sound like she's connected to anybody. She sounds like she's like you said, she's that hyper independent person. I'm going to get it all done myself. Mm-hmm. And so the question I asked her, and I haven't heard back from her yet, but the question I asked her is, what does your social network look like? First of all, what's your relationship with the father? I'm hoping it's a good one. If it is, reach out to him, tell him what's going on. But more than that, what does your friendship circle look like? I mean, is it all a group of Instagram only friends, or do you have some real friends in there who you can actually trust to reach out to and say, look, I got this stuff going on and I really need to get on top of my game in terms of looking at stuff from the positive side rather than the underbelly side. And I need you to help me stay there. Do you have somebody like that you can reach out to? Because if you can, reach out. You know, that's what that connection is for. That there's a very good reason why people who have good, strong social connectedness succeed is because they reach out and they take advantage of the network. They use the network to their advantage, and they also expect the members of their network to reach out to them because it's a reciprocal kind of situation. So that's what I thought about when you pointed out the value of reaching out to a professional. It can also be to a good social network.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this before about, you know, the person that said, what is the most important thing that you can do if you need to find a job? Mm-hmm. Tell everyone you know.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And it was like, when I heard that, they were saying, you know, almost 9 out of 10 jobs are because somebody knew somebody. Mm-hmm. And not in a way that, oh, you know, we're going to, not nepotism kind of things, but because.
Not the old boy network.
Right. But because, okay, I've got 2 candidates for this job. One of them I've never heard of before. The other one is about the same qualified and they know Walt.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, you know, it's that kind of thing. And so I kind of adapted that in my coaching to when people will come hire me because they want to be in a relationship. I started asking them, of the people that you hang out with, of your family, of your neighbors, of your friends, of your coworkers, how many of them know that what you really want is a life partner, is a husband, is a wife? You know, how many? And I've been shocked at how many people said to me, oh, I don't think really anybody know. So tell everyone you know. Right? It's important, that social network. You're right about that. And even if, you know, even if you're in a place where a lot of your friends are, especially now with COVID, where a lot of your friends are through social media, right? Like I say friends and I'm making quotation marks, like friends, Facebook friends. But, you know, I've met a lot of people online who are my closest friends. Some of my closest friends I've never met in person. Some of my closest friends, we talk on the phone every week, but I've still not met them in person. So you can make inroads with getting more intimate with people, even though they are a friend you met on social media. And like you were saying, Walt, to reach out for help, you know, an accountability buddy through text messages is one way to do that. Let's text each other every day with a, you know, with a good uplifting thought or something. It's like, it's just that accountability that we need, but it's connection. We are small group primates. We thrive in small groups. We are made to be connected to other people. And when we get in that space where we're going to do everything ourselves, we're not going to reach out for any kind of help. It's hard because that's not really how we thrive.
In fact, what you're pointing out here has another, it literally has a depth aspect to it, because I was thinking about, I've been doing my research to become a public speaker and, you know, what my talk is going to look like and so forth. And I ran across a quote by a former Cornell University student who talked about, in her quote, about how when she first went to Cornell, first of all, she was a transfer. She went to NYU first, and then she transferred to Cornell. And she had made some friends there, and there were people who later on in her description became very, very close friends, very, very dear friends. But at that point in time, where she just had just started to get to know them and so forth, she didn't really feel connected to them. Now, the way she said it was, I didn't really feel worthy of them as friends. I wasn't really confident that I could, you know, trust their friendship and so forth. And the way I interpreted that was she just hadn't developed the deep relationship yet. And it clicked. I said to myself, it's not just social connectedness. It's the depth of the social connectedness. How deeply connected are you to the people that you're connected to? If the connections are deep, then and presumably positively deep, I'm going to also have to kind of throw that in there too, because you can also have a deep relationship with somebody where you basically go down that negative spiral with them every time that you talk with them. We don't really want that one. We're talking about the other kind.
Right.
But if you have the depth of connectedness and you build that depth of connectedness, now it can become a real strength. It can become a real asset. And as I started thinking about that, I also started inventing in my mind little games you can play. Because one of the great beautiful things about having close friends is you can play games, especially when you're younger, if you're in college or whatever. I mean, that's part of the college experience is, you know, doing things fun with your friends. Well, I kind of took some of the more famous games and I kind of twisted them around, like Truth or Dare. I mean, it's a game a lot of people like to play, and it's really caught on in a bigger way lately among younger people too. Now, Truth or Dare is all about how embarrassed can we make each other? I said to myself, well, it doesn't really have to be that way, does it? We can create a new version called Liking Truth or Dare. And in the liking version, you either tell something intimately true about yourself that's building yourself up, or you have to be dared to say something about somebody else that helps build them up. So it becomes a let's build each other up kind of a game.
Love it.
Which is quite different from the original Truth or Dare.
Right.
But why not change the rules around that way? And now you're turning it into something where it's a mutually supporting thing. Let's build each other up. Let's help each other build that really strong core base of self-love that we all need anyway.
You know, I've been in several like online groups or challenges in the past where there was an assignment for the day or whatever that was to, you know, ask three of your friends to tell you what your best qualities are, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know is that everyone is always shocked and comes away just like, oh my goodness. Like they can't believe the list of wonderful things that their friends see in them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't always see those things in ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful exercise. You know, if you need to find that place of self-love and really feel built up and feel like, you know, if you're down in the dumps, to ask some people that love you and know you, it's like, what do you, even sometimes people that don't know you well,
yes,
like what good quality do you see in me? And it's often so enlightening to hear what other people see in you and feels really good.
It does. Well, and there's also another benefit too, that it's easy to overlook. I learned this one from a new friend named Debbie Garcia. She was on the show one time and I was on, she has a podcast. I was on her podcast too. And she does this really, I'll call it a game. It's an activity that she does with guests who come onto the show or people that she interacts with. She says, okay, just based on what you know about me so far, really quickly, give me 5 words to describe what you think about me. Whatever the first 5 things that come to your mind. So I came up with 5 things. And she said, those 5 things, after I named them all, she said, those 5 things are actually true of you. I'm acting as a mirror to you.
Yes.
That's really cool.
I have seen that done before and I like that so much. Yes.
Yeah. So like there's another example of how you can, working with somebody else, you can help build each other up. Because in that case, you're showing how each of us is a mirror to the other and vice versa. And reflecting back to us that which we most admire about ourselves without actually having to go there directly. We do it indirectly because we're admiring the other person.
That's great. That's wonderful. I love it so much. And it's so important, you know, these little ideas about who we are and how we show up in the world can really help us to hone in on that and create the version of ourselves that we want to be.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're closer than you think you are.
That's right. It's really true. Yeah. I mean, and the other thing that occurred to me, I mentioned earlier the ARAS, which we've talked about before. This is all about programming the ARAS because it's a programmable filter, right?
Yes.
So literally, whatever we deliberately choose to give our attention to, we are telling that part of the brainstem to let more of that stuff through to our conscious mind.
Right.
And whatever we're taking our attention away from, we're telling the ARAS, don't filter that stuff out. Don't let that stuff through to our conscious mind anymore.
Correct.
So when we play these games like this, they work well with our just doing it with ourselves or just doing the meditations or prayers or self-love, mirror work, whatever. But they also work great when we do it with somebody else. And when we do them regularly, we are reprogramming the ARAS.
Yes. And also
reprogramming what's going to come into our lives in terms of our experience. The stuff was already there. Like you said, it's been there. We're so close to it all right. along, but now we're noticing it. Now we're saying, oh God, there it is. Holy cow.
And also when we involve other people, we are not only building our social network, but we're building the neural network.
That's right. Yes.
Right. So that's a really important thing to remember. Is to build those connections because you're building connections in your brain.
Yes.
At the same time.
That's huge. That's
really huge. I know. I'm kind of excited about this.
Well, I'll tell you another one. This is another game that Louise and I invented, and this one works either with somebody else or on your own. You can do it either way. It's more fun to do with somebody else, but you can do it either way, and it works just fine. You can do it looking into a mirror or just sitting at your computer or sitting in your easy chair or whatever. It doesn't matter. Sean Aker, the positive psychologist, calls it three gratitudes. I call it three good things that Louise and I call it. Literally, at the end of your day, you sit back and you ask yourself, what are three things that happened today that I can identify, that I can relive in my mind, and I can just kind of re-feel what it was like that worked out well, that was different from prior days.
Yes.
Now, if you can't think of anything that was different from the prior day, at least go for something you can think of that felt good that you did do on a prior day. But
right.
where possible, you aim for something that you didn't feel on a prior day. And it really works you. It works your brain sometimes, especially yeah. if you had a kind of a rotten day. You have to find something. You have to find, I got to find anything, something. You know, I picked up a muffin. It tasted good. You know, anything. But if you do that often enough, and like I said, it's a lot more fun to do it with somebody else because then you kind of switch back and forth and it gives you time to think about what your next one's going to be while the other person's talking and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But that's a really great way to reprogram that ARS because you start very quickly. You notice it too after you've been playing the game for, say, a week or two. You start noticing the good stuff faster.
Yes.
That's what I found. You saw that too? Yeah. You notice that stuff so much faster so that the next time that you're doing, you know, at the end of day three gratitudes game, it goes so much easier. That first day that you did it, it's like, oh God, I can't think of anything. After a week or two, all of a sudden it becomes very easy. Like, oh geez, in fact, I can think of 4, 5, 6 things that went well today.
I did a similar thing. Years ago, I decided that at the end of the day that I would think of 5 things that each one was attached to one of my senses. So something good that I heard today, something that I tasted, smelled, saw, and touched, right? And I did the same thing you did at first because I realized that it started turning out that every day the thing that I touched was my little Maltese puppy and the thing that I tasted was coffee. You know, it was the same things. And so I changed the rules on myself and I said, no, it's got to be different every day.
Yep.
And about a week into it, somebody had sent me flowers and they were on my kitchen table and I was moving them and they were roses and they smelled really good. And as I moved them, as I smelled them, I got excited because I was like, oh, this can be the thing tonight that I smell. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that suddenly my brain was trying to point out things to me, things that smelled good, things that tasted good, things that were beautiful, things that I like to hear. And suddenly I was rewiring my brain. Exactly like you said, to look for those things. And
yes.
Look, whatever you're focused on, you're naturally filtering things out, right?
Absolutely.
I'm sure we've all had the experience where we're really focused on something and something else happens and we just don't notice, right? It's like someone says, well, I've been knocking on your door for 5 minutes. Say, oh, I'm sorry. I was so focused on this thing, I didn't even hear it. So we filter out. That's the RAS. We filter out the things that aren't lining up with our kind of preconceived notions, right? So if we make that notion that we're going to find good things, whether it's the three good things that happen at the end of the day or a thing that's attached to your senses or whatever, you will start finding them automatically. It's so exciting. We used to do that at dinner. We would, when my kids were still home, we would say, okay, name three good things that happened today. And I was just thinking as you were talking about it, we need to do that again, because that was a really exciting thing. And when I was in coaching school, we actually learned that in coaching school.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. And it wasn't part of our, like, how to coach anyone. It was an assignment we had to do.
Ah, okay.
Right. And the people that taught it to us told us their story. And I can't remember the details of it at this point, but it was so amazing because that's all they did. That's the only exercise that they sort of like started doing, and everything in their life in like a 2 month period, all these things shifted for the better. It was really cool. So yeah, so we were taught it as a way to make our own lives better, not part of even the coaching process, but just, you need to do this so that, you know, you train your brain.
And there's also a variation that you can do that you don't have to wait to the end of the day. You know, you don't have to have all the experiences happen before you actually play the game. And it's based on the idea of what you talked about earlier, the value and the power of words. You basically go back and forth between whoever's playing, complete two or more people. It can be a whole room full of people if you want. And the first person comes up with any word that's positive, that feels good to them. So let's say I come up with effervescent. And then you go to the last letter of that. That ends with a T. So the next word has to begin with a T. So somebody else has to come up with a word that begins with T that has a positive association. You just keep working that over and over again. Or a variation is you just go through the alphabet one letter after
another. I love
this. One person comes with A. The other person comes with B, C, D, E. And just work your way through. Q's, J's, Z's. Those are the top ones. But, you know, you skip over them. If it doesn't feel good, you just move on. You don't worry. This is not about trying to play the game perfectly. This is about building up the vibration. The reason I've done that on trips, and I mean, let me tell you, the trips go twice as fast with that game. Because your vibration gets high. It feels
right.
Good. Yeah.
Time travel 101.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a really, really cool thing to do. So yeah, I'm going to try to event a few of these games and include them in my talk, because I figured the more games I can teach, what, you know, better thing for a college student, right? Learn these positive energy building games that they can do with their friends.
Excellent.
Build some friendships at the same time.
Love it.
Speaking of positive things you can do, I also want to remind people that we've got all these really great things built into the LOA Today app. So if you need a way to raise a vibration, I mean, Cindy contributed her ebook, The Lovely Magician's Guide to Soulmate Success. There's also Daniel Mangana's Money Game, and there's Beyond Intention. There's Linda Armstrong's High Vibe Living. There's a bunch of stuff that's on there that you don't need to have anybody around to build yourself up doing the various activities that are on the goodies section. Plus, you get all the episodes there to play whenever you want to play them. So download the LOA Today app and share it with a friend and let them know that they can also do the same kind of thing. There are ways you can actually build up your vibe by yourself. Oh, and the other thing I'm going to do, and I've mentioned this a couple times, I'm going to encourage people to use their iPhones and their Android phones as mirrors, because we have the camera app built in. You know, we have the ability to do selfie photos. Well, a selfie photo is a mirror. You know, you put it in the selfie mode and you're looking at your own face and your own eyes, you know, so you want to do some mirror work, do it with a selfie mode, you know, in your camera, in your iPhone or in your Android phone.
Yeah. Very good.
So hopefully this is helpful for Tasfia and for anybody else who's been dealing with similar kind of stuff. I like what we came up with though, Cindy. This has been good stuff today.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good.
And yeah, keep us posted. Send us messages. Tell us about your experiences. Let us know how this was helpful to you, please.
Well, that's the other purpose for the LOA Today app. You send us a question or you send us a comment. There's an actual form for that. So take advantage of that as well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we did have a couple of people very quietly listening on the live stream. I just wanted to say hello to Josie and to Barbie. And thank you very much for being there. Barbie had a little smiley face with hearts in it. So
yay. Thank you, Barbie.
Barbie's definitely one of our loyal listeners, as is Josie, so we appreciate them so much. And we appreciate you, Cindy. By the way, we haven't done this in a while, but let's remind people how they reach out to Cindy Chavez, the coach, because you pointed out there is a value sometimes to reaching out for help. How do they reach out to you?
Yeah, they can reach out to me through the LOA Today app. They can visit my website, cindychavez.com, CindieChavez. I have a contact me on that page on my website. I would love to hear from you however you reach out. Yeah. Give me a shout.
There you go.
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm all over. Just
so the gauntlet's been thrown down. Contact her. Don't wait. Do it right now. And meanwhile, we'll have to draw our clothes and say thank you very much. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye,
everyone. Bye, everyone.